Hey guys, just a quick notice up front that I'm going to be back at the end of the episode to cover some Brit Rush Roundtable news and in general our plans going forward. So if you usually delete the pod as soon as the guys head into outro mode, maybe stick around this time. Or don't. It's your call. I'm not your mother. Or am I? See you on the other side.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling podcasting network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
Welcome to the Brit Rush Roundtable here on the Voices of Wrestling. I'm Ollie Cool, and with me is Arn Furious.
Hello.
And we're going to talk about British and European wrestling because that's what we do best. Yes, it's been really, really hot in Britain, so if you hear any noises from either my or Arn's windows, bees buzzing in or whatever, we cannot control that. It's a terrible, terrible time.
If you hear like a wasp or something around here, I will chase it off. I'm not going to have it disrupting the podcast, but like if a motorbike goes by, I have no control over that.
Yeah, we're on pest control here. And we have three shows planned to talk about from RevPro, WXW, and Attack.
Let's talk about some wrestling!
No more grumpiness. So yeah, we'll fire straight into RevPro Live at the Cockpit 17, and I've been doing the Live at the Cockpit reviews for Voices of Wrestling for the last few months, since the beginning of 2017, I think. And these shows have been low-key really good. Like, we were talking up how good they were last year, but I think last year they were still a bit exhibition-y and a bit too... You never really know what matches are going to be on set of shows.
The odd guy would really stand out, like Trent Seven. And like his matches were great, and you get some other matches that were really good, but then you get an awful lot of stuff on those cards that was just filler. Whereas now it's like they put the cards out, and it's like, I mean, looking at this card for 17, you look down the list there, and it's like, I don't think I've ever seen any of those matches before. Like, and he's gone out of his way to find like seven unique matches just because it's the Cockpit and he wants it to be meaningful.
The matches stay fresh, but like the stories have been very consistent this year. Like every sort of, there's sort of been a slot for like each particular wrestler on the card. So like Ginny's match and Eddie Dennis's match, and they've kept a consistent theme throughout all the shows of like what this wrestler's been up to. And like they're telling good stories that make you want to come back for more.
Yeah, should we take a look at this card?
Yeah, definitely. 17. We'll start with two imports, actually, and David Starr taking on El Phantasmo, who was wrestling in Britain for the very first time. I'd never seen Phantasmo before.
I was under the impression that El Phantasmo has actually moved to the UK.
He has indeed. Technically not really an import.
Yeah, well, not anymore, but like this is his first match. So he's moved to... He's going to be here for like a year and a half, I think, or a year or something.
Yeah, presumably like however long the visa is. Like he's moved from... Vancouver, where he's been wrestling for a decade pretty much, and like I'd never heard of him because he stayed pretty local there, but he seems pretty good. Like he'll fit in quite nicely. Like he's got a good look, if a bit too much like Angelico, and has obvious talent, obvious in ring chops.
His entrance music has a lot of swearing in it, and I did like that. Andy Crowdman was sat down on commentary and goes, "Oh, there's a lot of swearing in this entrance song, isn't there?" You might get him to change that.
Yeah, he might get his own RevPro official entrance theme, which is what all the cool kids want these days.
I don't want.
But yeah, this this was like a pretty standard David Starr match, I'd say. Like nothing like out of the ordinary. But like that's what you want from an opening match, really. Like he knows how to heat up a crowd better than many other people.
Well, they went about half and half. They kind of started off with a lot of lightweight comedy stuff, like the test of strength where he kept moving his hand. And And then they went into like a more like traditional hot opener in the second half with a lot of really tidy spots.
You got to have a banter to make it in Brit Rest, or at least hang in there with the best of them. So I think Phantasmo is off to a decent start there. Like, do you see him coming back for any more cockpit shows, or was this just like a trial run?
Well, I thought he did really well, so I would expect him to come back. Because that's the whole point of these cockpit shows, is to give talent a chance, and if they succeed, then they get invited back. So, like I said, with Trent Seven, like his run at the cockpit was like a gradual progression of him coming in, being relatively unknown, which is a bizarre thing to say now, but like this at the time it was true. And then sort of getting better and better, more high profile matches until he graduated to the Your Call shows. I'm not sure it'll go that well for El Phantasmo. I think for starters, like, his name suggests somebody with like a slightly wacky lucha gimmick, but he doesn't have that at all. It's very strange.
Yeah, it's a bit early noughties, isn't it? Sort of just some guy coming out but called El Phantasmo. It doesn't quite work.
I assume like earlier in his career he was masked and was unmasked.
Possibly.
I'm just guessing because like I don't really know Canadian graps, but yeah, it seems like a very strange name for like a normal looking guy to have. Yeah, I dig his entrance though. His entrance is really cool.
Yeah, it's got the like the Naomi gimmick of like the light up stuff.
Yeah.
The neon. Yeah, he definitely got something there. I'd like to see him again, definitely. Moving on, like a surprising result as you read it, but I guess once like you see that CCK interfered in the match, it's less so. But Chapman and Wall, the contenders, defeating the London Riots. I didn't think this was as good a match as their first match, which they had a couple of cockpits ago, where like the Young Lions basically really brought the fight and basically just got crushed, which is always fun to see. Whereas this was a bit too evenly matched. Like, I just wanted to see the Riots kill them, basically.
Yeah, it was a little bit botchy as well. There was some really untidy stuff in there, which is unfortunate, because I think both these kids are really good. They got a lot of promise. And I'm not just saying that because Josh Wall follows me on Twitter, and Curtis Chapman, if you look at his Twitter, his, like, what do you call it, the banner thing along the top, is one of my tweets.
Eat a sandwich, that's, Curtis Chapman.
That's the one.
That's like his gimmick now. they always say it on commentary.
I've given Curtis Chapman his gimmick. So but he's good.
So you're rooting for them.
Yeah, I'm rooting for this.
I think Chapman has real potential. Like he
reminds me of a young gets around the ring Zack Sabre really, really Jr. well.
That's the comparison I was going to make. Actually,
big heavy kicks in there and the technical stuff.
Yeah, and sort of like the screaming and the skinniness, and you can see it.
Yeah, they could do an angle where like. Zach kind of tutored him or something and kind of brought him up through the ranks. I could see that working. Then you can have one of them turn and they fight and it worked. I'll be okay with
that. And he's still only like 18 he has a lot of room to grow. Yeah. Like I say, this match probably wasn't as good as their previous one, which is one I would really recommend. But it sort of sets up Riots and their storyline on the cockpit shows, which is they're probably going to be chasing the tag belts now with CCK interfering. They've already had a match previously, and that was a strong match and very evenly matched. So it seems like they're going to transition the Riots from just being like a team they bring in occasionally to being one of like the feature acts in the cockpit.
The Riots have been losing an awful lot this year.
Putting over everyone.
It's the angle in progress, but they seem to be losing everywhere else as well.
Yeah, established team, I guess. So if nobody's like pushing them hard, then they're the ones letting other people get pushed.
I don't think it's going to affect them in any way because they'll always be over. But it's weird that they're 6 months in. I don't think they've won a single like featured match anywhere.
Next up was Cruiserweight Championship and Josh Bodum, everyone's favorite wrestler in Rev Pro, taking on Ashley Dunn, and he kind of just crushed Ashley Dunn here.
Yeah, I thought this was too long. I honestly thought that because of the different... I'm being serious here. Sometimes you need to have them squash matches.
Yeah,
Of the difference in like how far along Bodum is compared to Ashley Dunn, who's a relative rookie. He's barely out of the contenders division, if you could probably say still in it, really. I don't think you can have that long back and forth match. You can have him doing stuff like flash pins because Bowden's all cocky and confident, but you can't have him kick out of the Bliss Buster. That was just ridiculous.
Yeah, that was like the first move of a match, though, so it kind of made sense.
It just shouldn't have been in there. They shouldn't have put that in there.
Yeah, I think the problem with this match was, like, it was a little too ambitious. Ashley Dunn's like a former backyard wrestler, so you kind of see where that ambition comes from. But he's not got that crisp execution yet, like a Will Ospreay, to like warrant it. He maybe needs to tone it down a little bit. But I think his selling is like through the roof good. I think he could definitely be going somewhere with that.
Yeah, well, when you're coming up, that's what you should be good at. You should get that selling down first before you can get... And the problem with a lot of kids is they don't want to know. They just want to go, I want to hit all my spots, get my shit in. But sell. If you get good at selling, if you get good at taking a beating, everyone's going to want to work with you. That's just how it is.
Yeah.
Like, this is how Jerry Lawler got started, because like he just got good at being beaten up. He didn't really have... The dude's got like two offensive moves. But like he's a legend in professional wrestling. He dominated Memphis for like 40 years. You can go a long way on just being good at selling.
Mm-hmm. So I think they're going to keep Dunn around, certainly in RevPro. They gave him like the win in the big six-man tag they did with all like the junior wrestlers on the last Cockpit show. So they seem to be a little bit enamored with him. So he'll get another go around, I think. Coming up next, I thought was the best match on this show was Donovan Dijak versus Eddie Dennis, and I've really bought into this Eddie Dennis story they're doing. Like, I'm not usually a fan of the losing streak gimmicks, but I think like Eddie Dennis is the sympathetic one and like very rootable in that position. So he makes it work very, very well because he is so like charismatic.
He looked genuinely upset as well that he come close to beating Dijak, but he couldn't get the win. And it's like afterwards, it's just like, oh, I was close. I was so close.
Yeah, like, I especially liked the way he hooked up the next up driver. Like it seemed like it took like a gargantuan effort to get him up and hit the move, and then it still couldn't beat him. And that, like, it was genuinely frustrating.
Yeah, Dijak's really good as well.
Dijak has been fucking good in the cockpit.
I was gonna say with the storyline, they really pushed that on commentary here. Because they were talking about how Eddie Dennis kind of pandered to the crowd. Whether all this is leading towards him turning heel to get a win, I don't know. Or whether they just want to have him continue losing until he finally gets a big win and then goes on a push for like trying to win the title or something. There are ways they can go with it. It was between this and the opener. I thought those are the two best matches on this card.
Yeah. Yeah, I really enjoyed this match. I've bought into the Dennis story, and Donovan Dijak is having a hugely impressive year. He had a really good match with Josh Bowden on the cockpit before this one. So I don't know if RevPro are going to like give him a title match or something, but they definitely could because they have built him up a little bit now.
Yeah, I definitely want to see that. He's good enough to be in that that spot. After this match, they threw in a little promo time with Rob Elias. They had him come out sort of... I'm trying to describe the jacket he was wearing. And it looked like he'd murdered the cast of the Muppets and made a patchwork jacket of their pelt.
It is a bizarre one. I'm not a fan of his post-contender gear.
Yeah. So he's still technically in the contenders division, but he's
just sort of rebelled.
Yeah, I don't want to come out to that music anymore. I don't want to wear stupid black trunks. I'm going to wear something even more ridiculous. I did like Andy Q's line here, though, where he said, if it's good enough for me, it's good enough for you. That was good stuff.
I mean, Andy Q was on fire throughout this show, dropping lines.
Oh, when he slagged off World of Sport. Oh, that was crazy.
Calling it absolute pish. That was hilarious. It's just... He's definitely earned the Twitter love. I'll just say that.
Yeah, I've always respected... I think he's the smartest promoter in the UK.
Like, I mean, the fact that he was booking Pete Dunne versus Yoshihashi like after the UK tournament was tremendously impressive. Just the amount of like politicking to be able to balance that situation out was pretty tremendous.
Well, he's managed to kind of both get himself in bed with the most popular promotion outside of WWE in the world in New Japan, but he's also sort of mates with WWE as well, which I don't, nobody yeah. else is in that spot. It's like he's everyone's friend. It's like, oh, there's Andy. Hey, how you doing, mate? And everyone has that.
And he's like universally popular on Twitter as well, which is something almost nobody else in human history has been able to achieve. So
they'll turn on him eventually. They always do.
On to the next match, and another one they're building up strongly is Zach Gibson, and he defeated Dan Helico here. I thought this was a better Angelico match than his showing with Jay White against the Epic Encounter in April. And Gibson just keeps putting on like workmanlike performances, like in universe and out, just picking up the wins and keeping on putting on good matches without like having to do crazy spots or anything. He draws people in just with the mat work and his character.
I think he can do this. The matches that he has, he can do with absolutely anyone, and they'll get over because he's got the heat. It's like with Ric Flair, when he was doing that run in the late 80s where he was brilliant against everybody, it's because he was doing the same sort of match because he was bringing the heat. He was bringing all the spots. The only thing the opponent had to do was occasionally, like, you know, throw him off the top rope. And that's the same here with Gibson. Gibson is just bringing everything that a good babyface needs to work with. All they've got to do is bring their shit and do it properly. And that didn't happen with Hirooki Goto at Your Call, which I was really disappointed in that match. Just Goto just turned up and was like, oh, I'm in the mid-card, I'm going to dog it. he kind of had that a little bit again with that Angelico here. I don't think it was a particularly good performance from Angelico. I don't know why. But, yeah, the structure of the match and everything and the heat that was on it was perfect Gibson, and he's probably the most over guy they've got for like the heel side.
They're building him up really well, and I think his eventual match with Ospreay is gonna be really, really awesome, and it's gonna pay off this well. Like you say, having like a super motivated opponent will do him wonders, because then his act gets enhanced even more. And they've built it up really well, so I hope they do that on Summer Sizzler and like give it the stage it deserves.
Yeah, I hope it's a Summer Sizzler as well, because I'm there. So
we'll move on to Ginny defeating Nina Samuels. I've never seen Nina Samuels before, but she was kind of just the opponent of the week really for Ginny, who's kind of just taken over the women's spot in Rev Pro, and eventually someone's going to beat her, and it's going to be a big deal. She is, yeah.
Yeah, but this was an okay match. It's it was real sloppy at the start. It took a while for them to kind of gel. I don't know who to blame that on, really. It's just sometimes you don't click with somebody, it happens. And then it got progressively better. I think Ginny may have gotten legitimately hurt in this, because she took a backbreaker that was just absolutely savage. And she was selling her back for the rest of the match. And it got to the point where I'm like, is she selling her back or is she hers? But that is, if it was just her selling, then that really is credit to Ginny, because she's made me think that she was hurt, which is the whole point of selling, is that like a lot of the time you watch a match and it'll be like somebody's working the leg and I'm not convinced that the person is injured at all, and then they'll do like a springboard off the top rope anyway and it'll be like, yeah, that didn't mean anything. Whereas this was like, it was a spot that looked vicious, and then it set up like a series of issues for Ginny afterwards. So if that was a legitimate injury, then that was unfortunate, but if it was selling, then it was great.
Yeah, I thought this match definitely got better as it went on. I think Nina Samuels was a bit too reluctant to like go off-piste on the match a little bit when Ginny was like trying to fire her up a little bit, and she just came back with some generic stuff. So maybe that's something to work on. But I think Ginny's obviously here to stay in RevPro, and they're going to eventually find someone to go over her, and that will sort of produce a second top woman. So they're sort of developing a women's division slowly but surely. So it's definitely something to keep an eye on. We'll move on to the main event now, where CCK, the Chris Brooks and Travis Banks version, took on the brand new Suzuki-gun team of Zack Sabre Jr. and Davey Boy Smith Jr. And probably secretly, Davey Boy Smith Jr. was going off on one in his head to Sabre Jr., who in his mind has stolen his G1 spot. But, you know, all smiles for the cameras.
Yeah, but Sabre's a far, far better wrestler.
Yeah, yeah. I would totally agree. Smith is good, but he's a bit...
Like, he got
yeah,
good. He had that, like, post-WWE run where it was like, oh, he's going to put the effort in that Drew Galloway did and that, like, Chris Hero did. And you thought, oh, he's going to be the other guy that they've let go. And he's like, I'm going to show them. And I'm going to get real fucking good. And I'm going to go back there and rub it in their face. And he kind of went along that route for a little while. And then just he didn't get any better. He just kind of stayed at the same level.
Yeah, and like Sabre's the exciting new talented act, and Smith's just a bit same old, same old. Like he's still good, like a borderline, but I think like he was the fourth best wrestler in this match. So
yeah, yeah. To be honest, Davey didn't look that interested in this one.
No, like I thought he was a good supporting act for Sabre, like as working as a heel team. But like when he was in the ring himself, like he was not dogging it.
No, he just ran,
just being basic,
going through the motions, kind of stuff. Which when you're in a match with other people who try really hard, and especially this is true with Travis Banks, if you're not like going as hard as he is, then you're gonna look inferior, and he did.
Yeah, and it was kind of obvious to see. So this match was definitely popping off for best when it was Sabre in the ring, like with Banks or Brooks. He kind of bullied Brooks around a bit, and then Banks tags in or just comes in and saves him with like so much energy and fire, and it's great to see. I think this CCK team works just as well as the Brooks Lycos version, and maybe as like a more serious team as well.
I think I prefer Brooks and Lycos. Not for any work reasons, but mainly because they have that that banter, kind of the dynamic there where that they feel like they're related almost. You know what I mean? They have that like brotherly.
Yeah, they're like a family
going on.
They've got something special going on there. Whereas this is just kind of a tag team, but it's a very good tag team.
Yeah, yeah. So Travis can come in and do all the spots that Lycos does, but they don't have that bond. At least I'm not feeling it as much. But yeah, they're still a good
tactic. I definitely get that. Obviously, the big moment in this match was when Banks and Smith absconded to the back, leaving Brooks and Sabre in the ring. And you're thinking, oh, Brooks is going to get eaten alive. And then he actually makes Sabre Jr. the technical wizard, supposedly, tap out. To the octopus stretch, and like that's a huge moment really, and obviously it's now set up Summer Sizzler, probably not the main event but the title match at the very least, Sabre Jr. versus Chris Brooks in probably Chris Brooks's biggest singles match ever.
Yeah, I'm happy for him.
Tremendous spot. It's gonna be a big deal for him, and that's sort of like the opposite match to Rey Mysterio Marty Scurll, which is just like some big dream match, and this is kind of like the match more for us, if you know what I mean. Like more for the indie fan.
Yeah, the people who kind of followed Chris for years and have kind of gotten the payoff to see him come in and get a big title match. Did you think the crowd was a bit subdued here?
They usually are in the cockpit. I think that's maybe the one thing I would say bad about the cockpit is kind of the subdued atmosphere. But usually they heat up towards the end of the show. You know, like usually at the start of the show they'll be a bit quiet because there aren't that many people there. Like I think it fits like 200 people.
Yeah, but
it's kind of like a
you get like 200 people at Fight Club Pro and it's really loud.
I think it's just like the different atmosphere. It's like a Sunday afternoon rather than like a Friday night, so people are a bit like sleepier. People aren't like that. The you have to walk out of the arena to get to the bar, so people aren't as drunk. simply put. So I think it's a different atmosphere, certainly. But usually it does heat up, and then on 17 it didn't really heat up for any of the big matches, which I think maybe let down the show a little bit. I think if you are like a big fan of the atmosphere, then Cockpit may not be for you. But I think like the focus is on the in-ring stuff. That is the product in the Cockpit. So I think it all depends on what you value more, I think.
I think if you're going to have like a really like great match, I think you need both.
I do agree that you do need the atmosphere, and I think the Cockpit can produce the atmosphere at times. I just don't think it's like always there, or if it's like kind of a middling match, people aren't going to like get out off out their feet for it.
Yeah. But given the size and like the way it's set up, it's the kind of building that I'd love to watch a show in, but at the same time, because of the lack of atmosphere at the shows, I've been like, well, I don't particularly want to go out of my way to go to the Cockpit because I can just watch it on tape, you know? I'm not losing anything by not being there.
I think like you bring up a good point. This is kind of a product not especially tailored for the live audience. I think it does maybe come across better on VOD, and the show we're going to talk about next, I think, it did come across well on VOD, but I think it would have been like a crazy atmosphere to be there live for, and that show is Attack Press Start 5. We're talking Attack again, yeah.
Yeah. We don't get a chance to talk about Attack very often.
Not very often, though.
It's actually quite rare that we've both seen the same Attack show, because because you saw the Tag League, not Tag League.
Yeah, the Chris Travis. Invitational, yeah.
Yeah, you saw that one, but I didn't see it, so that ended up not being on a run sheet for the podcast. But we have both seen this one, so the theme of it was that basically Attack had glitched, and all of the characters were all mixed up. If you have not seen any Attack before this show, this is not the place to start at all. It'll just confuse the hell out of you. Nothing will make any sense. A lot of the stuff that they did was really good, though. I don't know if you noticed on the VOD, the watermark was upside down.
Yeah. And like the ring apron was upside down, and the poles, the ring poles were like covered in like the Matrix glitch effect, which are like just small touches to make you see that this show is not going to be your average show.
They put a lot of thought into it, and I do appreciate that.
Oh, yeah.
And I knew it was going to be...
And then at the end, of course, they like did a big sort of reset glitch and like, did special effects for that on the VOD as well, which I appreciated.
You could tell it was going to be a good show right from the start when Bolarama came out and it was Chris Brooks and Kid Lykos. Chris Brooks just walking out doing like the Lloyd Cat thing. I'm laughing just thinking about it, because like his face was just like he's trying to do that ridiculous grin, and all the way through the match he was like taking the piss out of Lloyd Cat. He was doing like moves really slowly and he was looking like he was gassed,
yeah and like walking around like a fat guy.
The whole thing was just
which is kind of mean to Lloyd Cat for me to call him that, but you know, he's a larger than average. No, Chris Brooks was having a whale of a time here, and I very much enjoyed Lykos being Splits McPins but wearing the Lykos mask. It's just like,
we can't not wear it.
I liked that all the mask characters didn't switch masks, which I found that funny. Like they just kept like it was especially weird for the Lovemaking Demon match where it was.
That was
still the Lovemaker.
I'll talk about that one when we get to it, but
that was a weird one.
they did a lot of other cool stuff here. They had Shay was a babyface. He was announced as Chris Roberts, and the crowd started chanting "This is normal," which I don't know, that just made me laugh. I just realised I said it was Bolarama, but it was Brooks and Lycos as Bolarama versus CCK, yeah. Which was Lloyd Catt and Splits McFins. The work in this match is great because they've worked with each other so many times. They know all of each other's spots, and they were just picking up on them, all these little details of each other's work. And if you've seen this match before, like the other way around, the work that they did here was some next level shit. Oh, it was tremendous.
It's like so much fun, the CCK Bolarama matches, and like this was obviously the weirdest one they've done, and kind of like it was never going to be as good as the last ones they've done, but like just a different take on it. It was a strange one, but a good one.
The second match on this show was the like ECW tribute one. Drew Parker's been doing this ECW gimmick since he got knocked out in a bingo hall and woke up thinking he was in ECW. So they had three other guys on this show playing like EC Drew characters, which was Sab Drew, the Sand Drew, and the Drew Meanie. And then Drew Parker himself came out as Sting because it was glitched and he was in WCW. I've been trying to be kind about Drew Parker's run because I know he's just a kid. He's only like 18 years old, and he's been doing some pretty decent impression work. But some of these matches, these ECW matches, have been like they could have actually have happened in ECW. They're that bad. This was just
maybe that's why they gave him this gimmick.
I've got no problem with Drew himself. Like I've seen a lot of his matches where he's out of gimmick and he's great. But I don't know. Yeah. Maybe it's time to put this one to bed.
Yeah, this was kind of this one was all about the entrances and just like what characters can we come up with, and then just the joke of doing WCW Drew rather than EC Drew. Like, it's just continuing this weird storyline in like the only way that Press Start 5 could.
Yeah, it was a funny match. I'll give it points for being funny, but like,
yeah.
The work in this was just so bad. At least they had a pretty good finish because the Scorpion deathlocked everybody.
That was fun.
Admittedly, fell over attempting it, but
yeah. Well, just like the real Sting.
Well, yeah, it was an accurate representation, a fine tribute. But yeah, that was a bit of a mess. Next up was Pete Dunne versus Tyler Bate, and they were the other way around. They'd swapped.
Yeah, this is what you paid to see, basically.
This was absolute peak point of the show was Tyler Bate.
Yeah, this is glorious.
Walking out as the Bruiserweight and like wearing
with the 24/7 title in his teeth.
Yeah. With a like the cat tattoo drawn on his knee.
Oh, that was beautiful.
And like he got all the mannerisms down absolutely perfectly. Oh god.
And then ripping off Tyler Bate's mustache.
See, Pete Dunne, I think he lost a lot of what makes him Pete Dunne when he came out as Tyler Bate.
he looks so young, like, when he's not being Pete Dunne. Like, he looks like a young man, happy with the world. When Pete Dunne isn't Pete Dunne, he looks, like, normal and happy.
But yeah, I thought Tyler Bate was tremendous in this match. They even put together what I would call this like a really, really good match, even like without the gimmickry. It was just they assumed each other's movesets and just kind of went at it. the only major issue that I had with it was that there was kind of no finish.
For obvious reasons.
Well, yeah, I mean, who would win? out of those two, I don't know what you'd do. But yeah, I really enjoyed the match. I really enjoyed Chris Roberts glitching in mid-count.
Oh, yeah. That was... he played it so perfectly.
And Pete trying to... Pete as Tyler trying to force his hand down and not being able to do it.
No, biting it.
And then the new anti-fun police came out with Mark Andrews, Eddie Dennis, and Flash Morgan Webster. All
Mark Andrews is getting properly into it, and
they were great.
Like this kind of show is good for like for guys who never get to play out anything other than a face or a heel. Like this is their one chance to switch alignments, and like you can tell like Chris Brooks and guys like that just absolutely lapping it up.
The best part about this when they had like Andrews and Dennis and Flash all come out behind Damian Dunn as like the new anti-fun police. Los Federales Santos Jr. is like pushing Damian Dunn in his wheelchair, and his facial reaction for those three baby faces coming out in the anti-fun police gear. If you haven't seen the show, go and watch it and watch his reaction. It is fantastic. I immediately had to go and follow him on Twitter. That was my first reaction. I want to know what is happening to this man on a day-to-day.
I like that everyone switched gimmick apart from Dunn and Santos. Like, yeah. they're immune to
it. It was too much fun. Switching gimmicks, far too much fun. Yeah, I laughed a lot during this. Like during the match and during the run-in at the end, I was laughing out loud. Which is a good sign. The show is working.
I think that's what they were aiming for.
So that the show pretty much peaked there, but the next match after that was Bird and Boar, and they swapped round. And Mike Bird's wild boar was absolutely perfect. Like he's been watching him from the apron, and he's got all the mannerisms down and the character and everything.
I thought Wild Boar's Mike Bird looked a bit like Noah Man. What's his face? Quiet Storm.
Noah Man.
He was giving me Quiet Storm. Noah Man. I thought he was giving me Quiet Storm vibes.
I can see that. So they were up against Eddie Dennis, which was Ryan Smile, and Nixon Newell. I'm not actually sure who that was, but it was a dude.
Kyle Fletcher, it says on Cage Match. Yeah, there were a couple of people who I didn't recognize on the show. Clearly, I haven't been watching enough Attack.
Yeah, Kyle Fletcher, I've heard that name. Somebody was pimping him out on the Twitter as being one to watch. And I can't remember who it was. It might have been Chris Brooks.
He got a very strange Nixon Newell down with his very feminine screaming.
Yeah, I wasn't keen on Ryan Smile's Eddie Dennis, but
I did enjoy when he tried to pick up both of Bird and Boar and just completely
just
failed.
Just fell over you. He's strong enough. I'm not sure what the gimmick stipulation on this match was. Was it supposed to be like a... It's like a table match?
Yeah, this was like a Mario level, because at one point... Boar as Bird picked up a one-up health heart and gave it to the referee and somehow like redeemed energy or something. I'm not entirely sure what was going on here. And they eventually won by sending Dennis and Newell, Smile and Fletcher through the boxes on ringside. So it was some sort of Mario thing. I'm not entirely sure.
This is the point where the I could have was. Done with some kind of commentary, just telling me what was happening.
Yeah.
I'm sure it's really obvious to somebody, but it wasn't obvious to me. Next match of that was Lovemaking Demon versus Elijah, and they'd swapped gimmicks. And I've never seen Elijah as anything apart from like a really angry guy. And his like version of Lovemaking Demon, even had Shea Person just breaking it in the middle of the match and just like laughing because he was grinding on like the actual lovemaking demon, and just that sent him over the edge.
This was like probably the most bizarre gimmick switch match, like I say, because the lovemaking demon was still wearing his mask as Elijah, and then Elijah playing the lovemaking demon without the mask, and obviously just the insanity of what they were doing. it was a lot to like comprehend and compute.
Yeah, it was that kind of show. It was very strange. To be honest, remember when we were in Germany and Christian Jacobi said he really liked Attack because they did their own thing. This is the most Attack show that Attack have ever done.
I can see that, yeah. You have to know at least what Attack do and some of the characters in it to get it, and obviously it is a show just entirely based on one gimmick. it's not going to be for everyone, and like even like I was stumped a couple of times, and this match was probably the one that stumped me the most, but like it is just sheer fun, and like they throw themselves into it with such gusto. So, and like there's nothing else like it.
I was a big fan of, if we move on to the main event, we had the Anti-Fun Police, which was Mark Andrews, Eddie Dennis, and Flash Morgan Webster against the Construction Brothers, and Mark Andrews, which was Travis Banks.
I think this was my favourite gimmick switch.
Travis Banks absolutely slayed me in this. When he did the skateboarding around the ring, and as he was walking past the front row, he just said, "I'm from Wales. I'm in a band."
I mean, that is something Mark Andrews would say.
Yeah, you know, but then I think Mark Andrews might have outdone like his own copycat by telling him to go back to TNA. it was a fun day to be Mark Andrews. Either one of them.
This match probably had my favourite spot of the whole show, which was Jim and Lee, the Brothers of Construction, who have recently gone over to the dark side of No Fun. And here, obviously, with the gimmick switch, they went reverted back to being the Construction Brothers. And it was put upon them to set everything okay by inserting the Press Start 5 disc into the GameCube to reset Attack, which was inside the GameCube, I suppose. Also, I was thoroughly enjoying everyone holding the Nintendo GameCube handle, which is like its special defining feature, according to Nintendo. just on a personal level, I enjoyed the video game console with a handle gimmick. But Jim and Lee obviously were faced with an ethical dilemma, which was embraced by the crowd, and eventually they opted for the good and true thing to do, which was to reset the system and turn themselves back to No Fun. Yeah.
I love the fact that just before they repaired it, they shouted out, "We fix things, that's what we do." It was just like...
it was beautiful.
Perfectly in character. It was. It was delightful.
And then the screen went fuzzy, and Damien Dunn died in his chair, seemingly. And everything reset back to normal with the face team coming out as themselves and pinning the now evil Brothers of Construction. I like that they switched the colour of their trousers from like red and green to then black when they were part of the Anti-Fun Police. They found the time to do that.
Yeah, this is a very surreal show. I enjoyed it a lot. When you watch a lot of wrestling, it helps if a company does something completely off the wall and different, because it really stands out. It's like we were talking about that cockpit show at the start. At the end of the year, I'm not going to remember that cockpit show at all. That's no offense to Rare Pro. They will put on better shows than that. They'll put on more memorable shows than that. Attack are putting on the kind of shows where there's something happens on the show, and it's always going to stay with me. And at the end of the year, I will still remember this ridiculous Press Start 5 show.
Yeah, you're not going to forget Dunn and Bate swapping gimmicks anytime soon, because like they're sort of the people of the moment right now. And just for them to throw themselves into a show like this with and have probably like the most surreal match on the show, it's just excellent to see. And like it shows that people like believe in Attack as like a concept.
Yeah, I love it. I do. That Attack just don't give a fuck. They really don't.
That's what you want.
Yeah, I want more promotions like that. I recently watched one of Anita's retirement tour matches, and it was a it's like a 6-man tag, and they had an electrical blast baseball bat gimmick going on, and Bob Sapp was in it. I want stuff like that to happen. Because it's like, you want the weirdness, because it stands out.
Mm-hmm.
And I can see why WWE do what they do so often, by just throwing completely off the wall shit out there and like putting titles on Jinder Mahal. Because it's like, it's memorable. It's like putting on a load of great matches one after another isn't memorable. It's just the right thing to do. So, yeah, I appreciate companies that try and do different things. Because I watch a lot of wrestling and I want alternatives. An Attack is that.
I definitely agree with that. You've got to have different kinds of promotions out there, and Attack are doing something very, very different and very, very cool right now. Anyway, we have a new heel stable in WXW on its rise.
Rise.
And Chris Colan is not a happy man. So he's decided to enlist some GWF boys to come and take over WXW. What do we think of Rise?
Well, I thought Colan was turning heel anyway, because he'd just been looking increasingly frustrated with Francis Caspit over the past couple of months. It was just, it felt to me like Colan's always been it better as a heel, because he just looks like an asshole. It's like, if you're... he's pre-genetically determined to be a heel. Just look at him.
Yeah.
He looks like a heel. Yeah, so he's brought in these boys from outside the company, giving it kind of a, I don't know what I'll say, if it's like an NWO-y type vibe, but it's guys that you don't really recognize, and they've come in and invaded. I think where it's kind of run a bit cold for me so far is that I don't think any of them are particularly like outstanding at professional wrestling. Like if I had to pick,
yeah,
the
I
best
think
one,
there's not one there's not one guy who really stands out above the others, or like a guy who's obviously there like designed to get over within the group. But like as we're going to talk about on this show, I think Ivan Kiev like really showed up, and he wasn't the best guy in his match, but he certainly contributed to it to make it a really awesome match.
Yeah. Well, how did you feel about Colan and Francis Caspin? Because that was the opening match. Obviously, Colan had to win there. He had to.
I did think this was a good match. It was a little bit not like a blood feud, but it did deliver pretty solidly. Like, I don't think Chris Colan's ever going to be like a main event guy. They're giving him a little push here, and I think that is good. And obviously, the big reason behind Rise as a concept is obviously Axel Dieter Jr. leaving and sort of having to end that ring camp story prematurely.
Yeah, that sucks.
So they're sort of going in a different direction here, bringing in a lot of new guys. Throw a lot of stuff at the wall, see what sticks. I think that's a really good idea, and they've executed it really well so far. Like these guys do feel important within the hierarchy, and obviously we'll have to see who delivers and who like stands out and who stays in WXW for like the long term. But so far, I've enjoyed it. I thought we're obviously gonna be talking about this Hamburg show that they put on WXW now, and I thought Rise as a group really showed through here. Chris Colan himself, I don't think he is gonna be a main eventer or anything, but I thought he was solid here. I think they can keep doing more Colan Caspin matches if they want to do that, if they want to keep the feud going. I think that'd be a pretty good thing.
I think if they're going to push like one of this group over the rest, at least short term, I think it's...
Eventually,
it's Colan,
yeah.
I think. Because the others are not really at his level, don't have his experience. don't have the chemistry that he has with people who are already in WXW. So I think if I had to pick one of them that was going to get pushed first, then I'd say it'd be Colin. And it depends what they want to do with the group as to how well he does. But yeah, it's interesting that they're doing something different, which I appreciate. But it, like you said, it really is a shame that the wheels came off the ring camp thing, because it was great.
Yeah, definitely.
Lightning in the bottle, that was.
Yeah, like, the whole thing from start to finish did not last very long, like, pretty much from Tag League to 16 Carat.
Yeah, that was great. Oh, well.
We'll move on to Kim Ray defeating Pete Bouncer, another new guy in the Rise group. I thought it was kind of odd that they would have any one of the Rise guys lose so early in, like, a prominent position. And Kim Ray isn't really doing it for me right now as a babyface. I thought he was quite a lot better as a heel. But obviously, with five new heels on that side, it may be a bit more difficult to slot him in there. So for now, he's just kind of, not floundering a little bit, but just kind of staying in his lane a bit.
Yeah, well, I don't think Kim Ray's ever going to be like a top-tier guy. He's just somebody who throws a lot of kicks and does some plucky comebacks. I'm okay with that.
What did you think of Bouncer here?
I
think he's definitely the Rise who stands out least so far.
Yeah, he's fairly experienced. He looks fine. He's like 6 foot tall, so at least he's got that stature going for him. His bumps were good. But yeah, just like everything that he was doing here as a heel was just straight out of the heel playbook from when heels were invented. There was nothing new at all. It was all so generic. It bored me, frankly.
Should we move on then?
Yes, let's.
Two of the more featured guys in Rise are Tarkan Aslan and Lucky Kid, the Young Lions, who actually like started the Rise group when they beat
A4
for the tag titles, and I did enjoy the little snippet of the promo that Bad Bones had with A4, Absolute Andy and Marius Alani, who sort of formed the WXW dads stable. Alani's they were sort of like, yeah, but he's still a dad. He still counts.
I mean, he's a literal dad.
He is a literal dad.
They should put him in there.
Put him in the dads. They were sort of banding together against Rise, and it was like a cool scene of them all shaking hands and being very formal and dad-like. So I like to see. And Bad Bones has sort of adopted Alpha Kevin as his tag partner after their short feud. They're sort of trying to make him a bit more concentrating on the wrestling, and it's an interesting story to follow along with. And here they lost to Aslan and Kid. This was the only one where it was like copious interference by Rise, and I don't really want to see that happen too much. I did really enjoy the imagery of them sort of busting in on Bad Bones like behind the scenes and just tearing him apart like 5-on-1. I think that is where like this numbers game should be used in like the backstage segments, the promos, rather than.
During the match, when they were doing work, like the heel numbers game stuff, they were doing it very well. They were concealing concealing the cheating properly, which is something that...
Not like Tai Chi.
Oh, fuck, don't get me started. in modern wrestling, especially in Japan, the heels just don't bother to cover up the cheating. And it's like, well, what's the point? Then you're breaking the rules that we've established here. That's a disqualification. Why is it not happening? It's you're losing the logic out of it. You can seal that cheating properly like these boys did in this match, and you're going to get a lot more heat for it.
Definitely,
because you're cheating and you're being like sneaky about it as well. You're getting like a double whammy. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think like the Young Lions are like a established team in GWF, so they know how to do it. And very good choice as tag champs to sort of put some instant legitimacy on Rise. And yeah, they'll have an eventual rematch with A4. I think we're going to go through the card of Shortcut to the Top after this, if you want to.
Okay.
I don't know if that's confirmed yet, but I would imagine that's going to be on there.
Yeah, I haven't seen the card. I just know it's the Shortcut to the Top match is like the Royal Rumble match for WXW.
Yeah, yeah.
I considered going to Germany to watch this because I'm not at work. And I was going to go to the airport anyway because I'm like flying out to the Philippines the day after. And then I thought, I probably shouldn't do that because I'm flying out to the Philippines the day after. But yeah, the thought was there. I was like, yeah, let's go to Germany for the day, watch Progress in the afternoon and Shortcut to the Top. But no.
I thought it was a good idea to start this show off with three Rise matches in a row, just like really establish that they're a threat and like a presence in the roster now. So we're going to move on to the first.
Would have worked better if that Pete Bouncer match hadn't been so shit.
Very true. We'll move on to like the first non-Rise match on this Hamburg show, which was for the Shotgun title. And obviously they were playing up David Starr's big run in the US with it. Defending it everywhere in like loads of promotions and being Mr. Shotgun, then losing it obviously at 16 Karat Weekend, and Angelico sort of trying to take up that mantle here and obviously beating David Starr in the match and sort of defining himself as like the legitimate Shotgun champion after Starr lost it.
Yeah, this was an Angelico that actually gives a shit, like comparing like this Angelico to the one that wrestled in the cockpit. There's a massive difference.
Yeah, I definitely agree.
I don't know if it's because they've wrestled before, so he has that kind of that respect for Starr and what he does, and they've got that chemistry already. I don't know if that's why, or whether it's just because he's the champion, he feels he has to bring more. But yeah, he was really good here. Starr was great. Some of the bumps in this were just tremendous, and the timing was awesome. It was a really good match.
Yeah, this is one of the two matches on this show that I would say you should definitely go out and watch. Yeah, just like very high level stuff from both guys. David Starr's having a really excellent year.
Yeah, yeah.
Like just I don't think I've seen him have a bad match yet. Like he has a very high floor. Like he's always very entertaining. And like you say, Angelico meshed with him very well. The bumping all around by both guys was ridiculous and like really got the Hamburg crowd going for this one.
Yeah, I enjoyed this a lot. I thought this was the best match on the card.
The next match I thought was the best match on the card, and it was like a big upset for Ivan Kiev, the fifth member of Rise on this show, defeating Volta. And obviously if you defeat Volta in WXW, you're there, you're in the mix. He's like the gatekeeper for legitimacy. And I thought, like, just the energy that Volta delivers in all of his performances is so infectious. Just the way he was, like, getting the crowd behind him, like, ushering their strength to put away Kiev, and then being unable to do so, whether that was him overlooking Kiev or just, like, being surprised by him. I thought it worked really well. I don't think Kiev is amazing. He was a bit ungainly in his execution of stuff and like maybe a little bit plodding. But
probably use the word sloppy, but the fact that it was still a really good match, even though Kiev isn't very good, I think that is testament to how great Volta is at the moment. Like the fact that he can go out there and just take anybody and just have the like the broomstick match with them. Because
I wouldn't go so far as to say Kiev is a broomstick. I thought he brought something here.
Like every match, every match Volta has, it has that quality to it, and it doesn't matter who he's wrestling. Yeah. I legitimately believe you could put any professional wrestler in the world in there with Volta, and it'd be a good match, just because his offense is so good that it's always going to be a good match. It's just so entertaining. The only thing I didn't like about this match was that Kiev won, because it felt that that Volta was just so superior to him in the ring that it just didn't make sense when he lost. Especially as like he,
I think
He just took a pasting for the whole
match. I think they were trying to get over the fact that Kiev is like the Iron Man of the Rise group and like isn't gonna take a loss lying down. Time will tell. If he can have a few more good matches with guys who aren't Volta, if he can like have a good resume, then they may be able to push him as like the breakout star of the group.
From the beating,
I think
he does
have that potential.
It's like,
but
he took such a beating in this match that he would have gotten over if he'd have lost. He didn't need to win.
Yeah.
Even from a point of view of like a new heel stable, it's like they've sent him out there against Volta, and he's hung with him. He's got beat, and then next time round they can kind of cheat a little bit and get him the big win. Yeah. And I'd have been fine with that.
I definitely see that.
Yeah, I was a little bit upset that they put him over, and now it's like, well, now it's like he doesn't need that help to get over like a big star. So what's the point of him being in the heel group if they're not going to use the heel group at all? It was just a bit strange to me, the booking on that, but I'll have to see where it goes, I guess.
Yeah, I do get that. One of the bigger matches that they've been building to for a while now on Shotgun is Bobby Guns versus Damac. Loser leaves town, loser leaves Hamburg, quite literally loser leaves town, in that the loser would never be able to wrestle on the Hamburg shows ever again. And like they've played up that Damac was from Hamburg, and I presume there's some sort of Manchester-Liverpool-esque rivalry between Hamburg and Bremen, because Bobby Guns was waving around his Werder Bremen flag.
That's, I believe it's called the Nord Derby. It's like the two teams that are from Northern Germany that are like the highest in the Bundesliga.
Yeah.
So that they're the rivals. A lot, like you say, Manchester and Liverpool would be a good comparison.
There was also an odd moment here where Damac accosted Bobby Guns in the shower, presumably naked. Homoerotic undertones in this one.
Accosted?
Accosted. And also the story was built around Bobby Guns sort of claiming that he'd had sex with Damac's girlfriend while he was participating in the Cruiserweight Classic, which I kind of like Bobby Guns' just sleazeball act. Like, there's just nothing redeemable about him.
Oh yeah, he's an asshole. Thing is, like, I know I've said several times that I don't like Bobby Guns, but it's getting to the point where me disliking him is more because he's a heel than because I don't like him as a wrestler. So that means he's doing all right.
I think he's good enough as a wrestler to like let his heel act shine through without like having to worry about the wrestling. Like, he isn't a very good wrestler, but like, he's not a terrible wrestler like Taichi.
It has got to the point where I cheer loudly for Bobby Guns losing, which that's usually good, I would say.
Yeah, and this match had a lot of heat for it. Like, people were getting really behind Damac as the hometown guy, and I thought that they ended up having a really good match. Like, this was the best match they've had together, and probably one of the best matches either of them have ever had. Like, neither have incredibly strong resumes as singles guys anyway. So I thought this was definitely like a good payoff to all the build they've done for it.
So with the Damac losing here, is this just part of an angle to have him wrestle again? To have to win the right back to wrestle in Hamburg?
I would assume so. I feel like if he's going to stay around...
Is he leaving?
Yeah. We don't know, really. I haven't heard anything of, like, rumours of him moving to the Cruiserweight division of WWE, which obviously he hasn't in for.
They did the angle on Shotgun where, like, he's got his phone and, like, you can see over his shoulder and he goes to delete, like, Axel Dieter Jr.'s phone number and doesn't. And then he goes to like Axel Tischer, Alexander Wolf, goes to delete his phone number and doesn't. And then he goes to like Volta and deletes Volta's phone number off his phone. So they're
definitely playing it up, even if it isn't going to happen.
Yeah, something's going on there. So, but it's making me interested in whatever they're going to do. So that's good.
And then we'll move on to the main event for the Unified title. Jørn Simmons beating Emil Sitochi, and you know Jørn Simmons would have been fired up for this one, because Sitochi was the guy who like got him interested in wrestling in the first place, so being able to have a main event match with him would have been a big deal for him.
Yeah, like the first wrestling he saw on TV was Emil Sitochi, wasn't it? I remember him saying that in the press interviews in Germany for Carrot. They did a pretty decent job of building Sitochi up, but I really don't buy him as a threat, even though they had him beat him with a Spanish Fly in a tag match before. I was still looking at it going, yeah, like, there's no way he's winning here. But then it is basically just a tour main event, so.
Yeah, that's the thing you have to remember with this show, is that it wasn't like one of the marquee shows, yeah, they call them.
I think it just came,
like the 16 Carat and Shortcut to the Top.
It just came off so well that they put it out on WXW.
Yeah,
now
yeah.
It's like, this is a really good show, watch it. So, and I agree with the sentiment. I think the vast majority of this card is really, really good.
Yeah, I thought the main event was pretty good as well. Like, probably nothing I'm ever going to remember at the end of the year, but I think for sentiment, certainly, Jørn being able to have this match with Emil was probably important to him. And I thought Sitochi did a good job of appearing legitimate, even if, like, in the back of your mind, you always knew that, yeah, he's probably not going to win. Like, they did build up the Spanish Fly, and they hit that move, and it was a pretty good near fall. And people were really into it. And it's a testament to how Simmons has grown as the guy in WXW. Because if they had had this match last year, I don't think it would have been any good. And they managed to do something that was enjoyable.
Yeah, that's fair. The only thing I didn't like about the match was they had a fan angle in it.
Oh, yeah.
Which I don't like fan angles at all. It's practically inviting your audience to do something stupid. It doesn't matter how many times you announce, like, don't touch the wrestlers, don't throw things into the ring. If you have an angle where one of the fans attacks a wrestler, you're giving people ideas, you're giving drunks ideas for stupid things to do, and I never like it.
Yeah. Also, it just doesn't look as good as, like, I don't know why Marius couldn't have just run in and attacked Jørn. Like, I don't see why he had to be all dressed up and hidden. Like, they could have just done a ref bump and had Van Beethoven smack Simmons over the head.
Yeah, and it's not the first time they've done it as well. They seem to be keen on having plants and stuff, and I don't like any of that. Like, anytime you encourage the fans to be physically involved in the match is just asking for trouble. So, but yeah, that aside, I thought it was a very good match. And like you said, Jørn Simmons as champion has been just a string of successes. Like, considering, look, mm-hmm. we were really on this guy's case, even like a year ago. And the improvements he has made have been massive.
Well done, Arn.
Thank you.
Okay, so we'll run down the announced Shortcut to the Top card they've got so far. It's going to be main evented by Jørn Simmons defending the Unified title against The Avalanche, Robert Dreisker.
Okay.
And I think that may very well be a title change there.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to see what they're doing with Dreisker, because it's like they push him really hard and then they ease back again, and then they push him hard and then ease back, and it's just like, wait, are you like putting him in as a main guy or not? And then they're just not quite sure. It's like, I get the feeling they're kind of holding off because they want to time it right. So
yeah.
And
I think this might be the time to shit instead of getting off the pot.
Well, if they do switch the belt,
that's not how that goes, but
I got it. If they do switch the belt, then they've got Dragunov lined up for a title shot. That could be who he beats for the title. It would make sense because he's beaten him before.
The Shotgun title is a three-way, and Helico defending against David Starr and Emil Sitochi, the last two champions.
They like doing that belt changes hands a lot.
It does indeed. I think they might be looking to like establish Angelico a bit more if they've like confirmed dates or whatever.
I've thought that before with certain people.
Yeah,
they'd lose it on the next show. So yeah, we'll see.
And then a huge singles match: Ilya Dragunov versus Matt Riddle.
Oh, that's gonna be good. You just reminded
me. Yeah, that was sort of the match we were all like looking for at 16 Carat that never happened. But
the point at which I considered going to this show was when they announced that one. They announced that as happening, and I was like, oh, I'm going to go. Screw it. I'm going to go anyway. And then kind of taught myself.
And then, obviously, the Royal Rumble style shortcut to the top match. The announced talent so far in alphabetical order, thanks, Cage Match. Is Absolute Andy, Alexander James, Alpha Kevin, Angelico, Bobby Guns, The Mac, David Starr, Dirty Dragon, Emil Satochi, Francis Caspin, Ivan Kiev, Bad Bones, Kimmeray, Marius Alani, Marius Van Beethoven, Pete Bouncer, Walter, and everyone's favourite, Young Money Chong.
Well, he's one of the GWF guys as well, isn't he?
Yeah. And then I think there's about 10 or so unannounced guys, so there's plenty of room for special guests into the
Progress
shortcut to
are
top.
Running a show in Germany the same day. Mm-hmm. So I wouldn't be surprised if all 10 of the guys were people who wrestled for Progress. Wouldn't be surprised.
Certainly a possibility, yeah.
And Riddle, probably.
And that's... quite possibly. So that's like WXW's next big show, and like one of their first big shows since 16 Carat. So it'll be interesting to see if they do put over Avalanche, and he's never held that title before, so it'll be interesting if they do finally pull the trigger.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that one. Like I say, I almost went to Germany for it, so fired up.
Indeed.
It's got to be better than their last... major show. It was the Superstars of Wrestling show, which had a Buff Bagwell match on it that was atrocious. It was so
that's
bad.
Why we didn't talk about it on here.
Yeah. But if we did, it would have been me slagging off Buff Bagwell for an hour. So bad. Apparently he's going to retire. I thought he retired about 15 years ago.
He no longer has the stuff.
No, definitely not.
Is there anything else you want to talk about, or should we get out of here?
Let's get out of here.
Anything you want to plug on?
Well, you can go over to reviewreviews.com to read the majority of my work. I also stuff at Voices of Wrestling, and you can follow me on Twitter at Arnold Furious.
And you can follow me at Another Ollie. The Live at the Cockpit 17 review that we talked about earlier. I've just written that, and it's gone up on Voices of Wrestling, just as we're recording, so you can read that. And also check out my Euro notes in the FLW newsletter every week. It's Alan Forel approved.
Gotta be good.
So yeah, I believe next time we're coming at you, it's going to be the Euro draft, so get excited for that. Because last year that was one of my favourite episodes we've ever done, so I think revisiting our old rosters and redrafting new ones. It was long. It's a marathon one, but it's definitely fun. And expect that guy Ethan Silver to be up a bit more on our boards this year.
Probably. I'm going to have to look to see who was drafted last year, because I remember some of it. And I know I made a couple of really bad choices, but I made some really good ones as well, so...
Yeah, I think that'll be the most fun, is like pointing at everyone's embarrassing picks.
We should do a quick pre-podcast podcast where we talk about last year's.
Yeah. Now, that'll be good to name and shame whoever picked.
This has me really worried now, because I can't remember who I actually picked. But I have it somewhere, because Rob shared the rosters with me on a Google Sheet or something, so I can always look it up beforehand.
It's hovering around the internet somewhere. So yeah, I've been Ollie Court, he's been Arn Furious. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
Good night.
Hello again, guys. Back again, as promised, at the start of the episode. Actually, if you're a new listener, you may have absolutely no idea who I am, so I should probably introduce myself. I'm Robin Reed. I used to be the host of this show, but I've slipped back into a producer/editor role, with the occasional guest appearance when I'm needed. I run the European side of Voices of Wrestling, so any complaints you have about that, probably my fault. So with that out of the way, I just wanted to say thank you to each and every one of you who listens every week, or every time we put an episode out. Not quite every week, but you know. We're blown away by the numbers this show does, and want to keep growing the show more and more. So as part of doing that, we're going to be moving to a more regular schedule. From now on, touch wood, the BritRest Roundtable will be coming out on a bi-weekly schedule every Monday. Well, every other Monday, which is what bi-weekly means. Nice. There may be the occasional exception, but we're really going to try to stick to that. However, so much happens in BritRest these days that a bi-weekly schedule is only just enough to cover it, and missing an episode would be a real problem because we get behind and, you know, we want to cover all the major events in BritRest, and monthly would not be enough to do. That said, we like to occasionally do episodes that change up the formula a little. We're not just running through upcoming or shows that have just finished. Some examples of these are our tour episodes with the interviews, like we did with the 16 Carat, the Britties, which are our year-end award episodes, and the Euro Draft that we did last year with Ian. When we do an episode like that, though, we're going to be placing it in a week between two regular episodes. So for that little period, we'd be going weekly. That way, we wouldn't get behind on the wonderful world of BritRest. Does that make sense? Probably wasn't explained too well. Oh well, you're smart people. You'll figure it out despite my best efforts to ramble and be confusing. Basically, expect a BritRest Roundtable every other Monday. Apart from sometimes, it'll be every Monday. Get it? Got it. Good. As for the near future, here's what we got planned. Next Monday, I'll be joined by Ollie to revisit the Eurodraft we did last year, and with the benefit of hindsight, try and decide who won. We'll set up some sort of late thing for you guys too, because you guys are far better impartial judges than we are. Then the Monday after that, we'll be back to a regular episode, but I think Arne is away for that, so I'll probably be stepping in to talk the British J-Cup with Ollie. We'll both be at that too, so if you're going, make sure to say hi. Then 2 weeks after that, I will be back for another regular episode, and then the Monday after that, which I think will be the 31st of July, if I've got my dates right. Strong possibility I haven't. But if I do, we'll be then looking to do our second Eurodraft, backed by popular demand, with myself, Ollie, Arne, and two mystery guests. I was about to say their names there, but I haven't actually asked them yet, so I probably shouldn't reveal who they are before they've agreed. Yeah, that'd probably be smart. So yeah, that just about wraps things up on this overly rambly announcement bit at the end of the episode, which has gone way too long, but you know, that's why I stepped away. I'm way too bad at rambling. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next Monday. Oh, and congrats to the best boys for winning all their belts. All of them.